Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome to this Peak Prosperity podcast. I am your host, Chris Martinson. When you read our site, you'll find that Peak Prosperity has been focusing on the sick care system that dares to call itself the healthcare system in the United States. And along with many others, we at Peak Prosperity predicted that Obamacare would increase costs for most people, not reduce them. Now, how did we know that? Well, simple. The middlemen, the insurers, were left completely off the list of entities being asked to participate in controlling costs while expanding access. It didn't, or at least it shouldn't, have taken a genius to work out the logical conclusion of that experiment. Now, you've already heard me squawk about my 24.8% insurance increase last year, and you're going to hear me squawk about it next year too. And most of you already know about the impact of rising healthcare insurance costs from the consumer standpoint. To talk to us about the impact of Obamacare from the physician standpoint is a very special guest, Dr. Dave Janda. Dave Janda is a doctor. He's a clinical orthopedic surgeon. He's based in Ann Arbor, Michigan, the director and founder of the Institute for Preventative Sports Medicine, also based in Ann Arbor, which is the only healthcare cost containment organization of its kind in North America. His academic career has been highlighted by many awards and distinctions. And in the early years, he was one of the winners of the Westinghouse Science Talent Search Competition. I can't wait to hear about that because that's a big deal. Dr. Janda has also distinguished himself in the research arena and was appointed by the former Bush administration to the board of the National Center for Injury Prevention and Control. He's authored a book and he's chronicled his efforts in the field of preventative sports medicine and has outlined his approach on how to create a more available and more affordable healthcare system, if such a thing is even possible. Can't wait to hear about that. And he and the book, his book, The Awakening of a Surgeon, have been featured guests on the Oprah Winfrey Show, and his research and prevention-based studies have been featured on many television, radio, newspaper, magazine presentations. Wow. Welcome, Dr. Dave Janda.
Well, Chris, thanks for having me aboard. And I love all the work you've done. I'm a big fan of yours and your organization, your website for years. You come at it the same way we do, or I do, and what we do at our institute, and that is we're trying to look out for folks. And in the process of trying to do the right thing for folks, we get in a lot of trouble with the New World Order criminal banking syndicate that seems to run most industries around the world and most governments around the world. And it's unfortunate. You know, they should actually be, I believe, embracing you and embracing me. And as you well know, we get a lot of blowback for pushing the axis of trying to help people and encourage people's freedom as opposed to them being oppressed by the globalists around the world.
Well, let's go cut right to the chase. I was listening to a recent podcast of yours on your site from March 20th of 2016. You said it was time for you to step aside from practicing medicine.
Yeah.
First off, how long have you been practicing? And then tell us about that decision.
Well, the site you're talking about is DaveJanda.com. As you're aware, I, in addition to my work as a clinical orthopedic surgeon and a prevention researcher, I also host a live radio show every Sunday from 3 to 5 Eastern on WHAM Talk 1600. I'm very fortunate that the owners of the station don't restrict content. So where we go, I don't know if any person on an AM or FM station goes there. We out the banksters, we out the criminal international banking syndicate, we out the globalists about how they're trying to oppress every person in our country and around the world, and also how they're trying to strip freedom and liberty from every person around the world and in our country. So the name of the show is Operation Freedom. Folks can stream the show at DaveJanda.com every Sunday from 3 to 5 Eastern. And we tackle many of these issues, one of which is Obamacare. Now, what the podcast in particular you're talking about, Chris, on March 20th, I announced that I'll be leaving the clinical practice of medicine. When I graduated from Bucknell University, from college with degrees in chemistry and economics, I went to Northwestern University Medical School in Chicago then did my internship and residency at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. Then I actually experienced a national healthcare approach where I did my fellowship in Canada at the University of Western Ontario in shoulder reconstructive surgery. And then I came back to Ann Arbor to a 9-member orthopedic group, and I've been with that group since 1989. So that puts me about 27 years outside of my residency, and including my residency, 32 years of the clinical practice of medicine. Chris, in a nutshell, I decided I needed to retire from medicine, the clinical practice of medicine, because I truly felt that I could no longer take care of people the way I was trained to take care of people in a high-quality manner. Now, understand something. I've been involved, as I mentioned, 27 years in the clinical practice of medicine. I have battled insurance companies every day of my professional career since I got done with my residency program 27 years ago. And understand something. The formula that insurance companies use and government uses to cut health care costs is the most inhumane and unethical means of cutting costs. And that is the rationing and denying of care. It is what I have fought against my entire career. See, my approach, as we outlined this through the Institute, is if you're really sincere about cutting healthcare costs, quit trying to manipulate healthcare need by denying the availability and access to care. In other words, rationing care, which bureaucrats around the world try to do, and in particular now in the United States, and insurance companies try to do. If you're really sincere about cutting healthcare costs, prevent healthcare needs. It's the single greatest bang for the buck. Now, you're not going to learn that in medical school. I didn't.
Right.
And the reason is, and there's a lot of diplomatic answers I can give you, but anyone who's ever listened to my show knows I'm not a diplomat. Here's the bottom line. Prevention is not stressed in medical school, in internship, in residency, in post-residency activities, because, Chris, there's no money in it.
Mm-hmm.
Where all the money comes is waiting for the injury to happen, waiting for cancer to happen, waiting for the cardiovascular event to happen, and then dealing with it. And let's face it, in the West, and in particular in the United States and in Canada, we're good at dealing with problems once they occur. But when it comes to prevention, I can tell you the blowback I have gotten over the past 30 years in working in prevention is enormous. But let me give you an example. Just one of the studies we did through the University of Michigan and then carried over to our institute, just one of the studies, we looked at sports injuries, we found a way to save 1.7 million people from getting injured every year and save $2 billion, with a B, $2 billion in healthcare costs every year. That study that came to those conclusions and those findings that was documented by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention of the magnitude of the savings, we spent $1,000 once. We spend $1,000 and we found a way to save $2 billion every year. And when it comes to prevention, that's not the exception to the rule. It is the rule. Yet, the vast majority of folks in medicine still know minimal about prevention efforts and what to do and what they can do for their patients. And the reason is because there isn't any money in it. So I've fought these battles, and you would also think that the insurance companies would love prevention. I mean, when I first started on this 30 years ago, I was pretty naive. And I thought, gosh, you know, we're starting this nonprofit research institute. You know, I'm sure the insurance companies will help fund it. I can tell you, Chris, in 30 years of being with that organization, the Institute for Preventative Sports Medicine, we've never gotten one penny of funding from the insurance industry. And about 15 years ago, I got a call from an insurance executive from New York. He says, I'm flying out. I want to meet with you. I'm thinking, oh, finally, they finally figured it out. I mean, they finally saw that, hey, look at these guys. They spend $1,000 once and it saves $2 billion. Finally, they're going to embrace this. Chris, I'm sitting at the desk. This executive walks in from a big insurance company, looks at me and he goes, Janda, let me tell you why we hate you. Direct quote. I said, hate me? You should love me. I should be your poster boy for finding a way to help people and save costs. He goes, no. He goes, we hate you. You, in fact, are on the most wanted list, dead or alive. I go, what? Why? Where are you going here? He said, listen, you. He goes, son, you don't understand how the insurance industry works. He goes, let's say the cost of insuring you is $1,000. He goes the most according to the bean counters and the feds that we can tack onto that is 7%. So your premium's $1,070, right? I go, yeah. He goes, now let's say we do all those things you talk about to save costs. And he goes, and we figured it out with our actuaries. Actually, the cost of insuring you is no longer $1,000, it's $100. He goes, now, son, even though all doctors are morons, direct quote, when it comes to financial matters, he might be right on that. He said, the 7% of 100 is what? I go, 7. He goes, well, wouldn't you rather have 70 more than 7? He goes, you see, let me tell you how the health insurance industry works. He goes, the higher costs go, the bigger cut of the pie we get. And that's why we'll do everything in our power to shut you down and shut down your prevention work.
It's that stark, isn't it? This is, I mean, whether we're talking about what Monsanto wants to do you got into medicine because you naively thought that it was about that we as humans wanted to help each other and wanted to help each other have fulfilled, connected, alive experiences while we're here on the earth. And you're finding that there are people who don't care at all about that. They'd rather have money.
Absolutely. And in fact, there have been a number, not a lot, but there have been a number of physicians that have come to me and said, Dave, stop this. Stop doing the prevention work because you're costing us money.
Really?
Yes, really, really.
I don't know why I'm shocked by that, but I am.
Corporations, when we have shown their products have caused injury, there are the first thing they do, Chris, and I talk about this in my book, The Awakening of a Surgeon, the first thing they do is they call me and they said, guess what, we're going to sue you for putting this research out. All peer-reviewed published medical journals. We've got over 50 articles we put out, studies. I said, you're going to sue me for telling the truth? I go, put your data up against my data, bring it on, I'll go to court with you. Well, they never did because they didn't have anything. The second thing they do is when the threat of lawsuit doesn't work, then you start getting the phone calls, Chris, about saying, watch your back. Bad things happen to people that keep talking. And then when that doesn't work, Chris, at one point I had to get protection for my wife and kids because the threats were coming and being directed at them.
And who do you think these threats were coming from?
Well, I know who they were coming from, and they were coming from big industry, big business, the so-called globalist syndicate, because all they care about, Chris, and I learned this many years ago, all they care about, Chris, is money and power and control. And when you start stepping on their feet when it comes to their revenue source, because that's where their power and their control comes from, they want to squash you like a bug. And that, unfortunately, is the way business is run, not only around our country, not only in North America, but around the world.
Right. You know, Dave, the more I've looked into this, so a big tour for me in the last few years has been around nutrition, right? So I've lost a bunch of weight, and my business partner, Adam, you know, we both just started looking into nutrition in our own lives and discovered, oh my gosh, it's not a hard nut to crack. People cracked this nut many, many decades ago, but I'm thinking specifically around the time when that food pyramid got put out, you know, several decades ago, that there was good, solid clinical data that talked about the role of carbohydrates and in particular sugars and refined sugars in creating both obesity, metabolic syndrome, atherosclerosis, and other sorts of things that we could clearly point to. And we had all of that data. It was clearly not only was it not followed, but it was heavily suppressed for a very long period of time. And you would think just from a logical standpoint, I don't know if you've seen it, but the CDC put out this chart of obesity in America where, you know, once a state went to like 30% over the BMI recommended levels, the state goes bright red. And from starting late 1980s, states just start going red one by one by one by one. And we have an epidemiological disaster, probably one of the largest ones ever foisted on a population. And still, it's pretty fringe topic to talk about the fact that we've been poisoning ourselves through our dietary guidelines. This should be simple, right? Shouldn't this be like simple case closed data?
It should be simple case closed data, but understand something, Chris. The globalists, and that's not conspiracy theory. The globalists around the world do not want the populace to be healthy, to be happy, to be financially well off, you know, there's, I've heard the word used in Washington that those of us that are not part of the globalist network, they call us useless eaters. I've heard that term multiple times. They want, and this sounds sinister, and frankly, it's evil what they're about. But the same reason why they want to squash me for my work in prevention, because prevention is about empowerment of individuals, not empowerment of government, not empowerment of big business, but empowerment of individuals, about taking control of people, individuals taking control of their own lives and making them better. They don't want that message out there under any circumstance. And they don't want you, Chris, nutritionally being healthy. Because all you have to do, yeah, I'm sure you've read Agenda 21. It's in black and white. That document is, it was brought to the United States by George Bush the First. And in the appendix of Agenda 21, it talks about a huge population reduction worldwide. Well, guess what? The prevention model surely doesn't fit into their model. And neither does being nutritionally sound. So what drives all these aberrant recommendations that are put out by governments that actually many times cause more problems than help is big money. It's the globalist money behind it. So you see it as a disaster that obesity is going through the roof, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does Monsanto?
Do the big pharma companies? No.
No, they make a hell of a lot of money, don't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah, they get more money out of it. They siphon more money from us useless eaters. No, I know this sounds like conspiracy theory, but I can tell you, you know, one of the ramifications of the work that I've done in prevention. Back in 1988, I'm in the clinic. The phone rings. My assistant comes to me. She goes, "Dave, you got a phone call. You got to take it." I go, "Well, I was just on the phone with the emergency room. Why would they be calling me back so quickly?" She goes, "Dave, it's the White House." I go, "The White House?" She goes, "Yeah, there was an article about your work in prevention in one of the Washington papers, and this person told me that President Reagan read it, and he'd like you to work on healthcare policy issues focusing on prevention." I go, "Okay, that's cute. It must be one of my buddies in D.C. that got somebody to call and say that." I go, "Fine." So I took the call, and very nice woman, and she's telling me about this. I go, "You know, you're doing a great job. Who's your boss?" And she goes, "My boss is Ronald Reagan." I go, I understand this is a very good joke. Tell me who your boss really is." And I tell them they did a great job of pulling this joke off. She said, "No." She goes, "Really, Ronald?" I go, "Fine. Give me your phone number. I'll call you back." Just to, you know, knowing full well it's a ring in the White House. And I call that number, and sure enough, the White House operator picks it up. I give the name of the person, and it is the person there, and I was thoroughly embarrassed. But that led me, Chris, to come into Washington back in 1988, and starting with Ronald Reagan, C. Everett Koop was the Surgeon General. Jack Kemp was in the cabinet at that point. I got to know Jack Kemp very well, Dr. Koop very well. And Ronald Reagan's directive to myself was, "Look, you come at this differently. You care about people. Just work with Koop, work with Kemp, and help people." And I can tell you, I told Reagan's the entire Reagan administration that was there, I said, "You know, this is really going to upset the insurance industry and the pharmaceutical companies and big and medical, the ivory tower elitists that run the AMA and the like." And the response from Reagan and his administration was, "We don't care, just do what's right." Okay, so now, unfortunately, this is at the end of the Reagan term, but I was working with Koop and working with Kemp, and we were moving along, and then H.W. Bush becomes president, and now there's this transition period, and they say, "Well, what are you working on?" I'm talking about the prevention stuff, free market healthcare reform, such as with health savings accounts, prevention initiatives. And Bush's response, old man Bush's response was, "Well, you know, we can't do that. I mean, you know, we get a lot of support from the insurance industry and the pharmaceutical companies. We can't upset them." Well, Chris, that then all of a sudden our prevention efforts were put on the back burner. Now Clinton becomes president, okay, and this is even before he started talking about Hillary care. Bring me in again, you know, let's talk about your work in prevent. And I tell him, and the response was from the Clinton administration, well, we can't do that because it would upset the insurance industry and pharmaceutical industry. We get a lot of support from them. It's the same response as the Bush 1 administration. And then George W. comes into power and have the same conversation and get the same response as the old man in Clinton. And right then, Chris, I realized that this is not a two-party system. I'm not trying to be political. This is a point of fact. And this is my experience on the ground, face-to-face with people in the White House. There is one party, and I call them the Republicrats. They are owned and operated by the globalists, mainly the banking community, who owns these guys. And it doesn't matter if they have an R or D after the name. And it's more than just the people in the White House. What I came to realize was about 99% of them in D.C. are owned and operated by the globalists. And they march to the tune of what the globalists want. And what the globalists want is stripping people of their freedom and liberty and oppressing as many people as possible. And the right-left axis, and this is something Reagan taught me. This is the first thing I learned from Ronald Reagan. The right-left axis is a sham. It's there to have people going after each other and dividing and conquering. The axis, the powers that be in the world work, are in the up-down axis, up being freedom and down being oppression. And their goal is to strip freedom from as many people as possible worldwide and oppress as many people as possible. And they use the right-left axis to divert their attention from what they're really up to. And that was true back in 1988, and it's been true long before 88, but it's true today. It's a sham. And politically now, no matter what, love them or hate them, Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, if you love them or hate them, it doesn't matter. This is not a right-left issue. But what those two guys have shown is exactly that. The powers that be look at all of us as being minions, entities to be manipulated, and whose opinions and are not warranted, that they know best. That's what those two guys have exposed. You mentioned I live and work in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I call it the People's Republic of Ann Arbor. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. People, when I was coming out with this information on my radio show 5 years ago when I started in October of 2010, I'd get a lot of blowback, a lot of negative blowback. Now, Chris, I have all these people coming to me saying, you know, I thought you were a conspiracy theorist. I thought you were one of those tinfoil hat guys. I thought you were kind of out there. But you know what? Everything you said starting 5 years ago has actually been accurate, and it's been on the money. And
well, this is actually, Dave, a really encouraging to me, if we can use that term, because the election fraud, which is something I tracked very closely. So I'm a science guy, right? Yeah. A little bit nerdy this way. I love things like standard deviation. So in 2004 and 2008, we saw instances like in some cases where more votes were recorded in certain counties on Diebold voting machines than people lived there, let alone voters, right?
Right.
But the difference between exit polls and actual results being 3, 4, 5 standard deviations away says that these things should happen once every 25,000 to 1 billion years, depending on how outrageous it was. We have statistical prima facie proof that our elections were being manipulated and stolen. Here's where I lost it. So when Gore lost to Bush, principally that they did this whole hanging Chad thing in Florida, but if Ohio had swung, that would have done it as well. And there was so much grotesque overt fraud in the Ohio election results. It's just, it's astonishing, right? Everybody who writes about it, there's books written about it. You can download PDFs. It's all laid out in gory detail, clearly stolen. Gore tossed his hat in 3 hours after Ohio came in. Like, he's got people who could look at that and say, dude, this is fraud. Let's contest it. But he didn't. He was, it was like, that's when I knew that I was watching a WWF fixed fight, right? I wasn't watching an actual boxing match. I was watching something more fraudulent than that. And so, yeah, but to me, seeing those same tricks being done now, mostly in service of Hillary at this point against Bernie, young people are waking up to this and going, hey, wait a minute, this really stinks to high heaven here.
Absolutely. Look at how more aware people are today about what's been going on with Hillary and Bernie. Look at what people are seeing with Cruz and Trump, right? Where all of a sudden people are going, wait a minute, with Cruz and Trump, you can't, all of a sudden you're giving, nobody takes a vote, but you're giving all the votes to one guy? What? Now, back in 2004, people would say, well, you know what? Yeah, I think you got it wrong. You got the facts wrong. That couldn't have happened. Right? So I agree with you, Chris. I really, and some of this I got to give credit to actually Ron Paul, because Ron Paul had a pretty big movement 4 years ago, especially with the college kids, which I have college age kids myself, and I can tell you they kind of locked on to what he was saying, and they were kind of like, you know, Dad, you've been saying this for a long time, and you know, Ron Paul's saying this now, and you know, it's all kind of adding up. I mean, this has been like a snowball coming down, you know, the hill, and it's been gathering momentum as much as the globalists want to slow it down. And that's why I think, Chris, you're seeing some things happening around the world that to me indicate the globalists are panicking and they're desperate because they believe the populace is awakening. And let's say there are, I don't know, 1,000 in the highest echelon, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, all those dweebs, 1,000 of them. There are hundreds of millions of us. And that's what they don't want people to realize, that the power is with us useless eaters. And when the power of us, of useless eaters, is generated in a positive manner against the globalist syndicate, they don't stand a chance. I think they're panicked. I think they're desperate. And I think one of the other entities that brought some of this awakening on, Chris, is Obamacare. You know, when I had been working in healthcare policy, as I mentioned, for a number of years with Reagan administration, not that Bush 1 or 2 listened to me or Clinton listened to me. But in 2009, you know, one of the fallacies, and this is something that 99% of folks in our country still do not realize, Obamacare was two parts. The second part was the healthcare bill. The first part of Obamacare was actually hidden in the stimulus bill. So over the years in Washington, I had developed a network of people still in government. There's some good people in government. They're not all bad. There's some really good people in government that are trying to fight for the freedoms of people around our country. Just so happens the globalists have been dominant over the years, but there's still some freedom fighters within our government. And there were some folks that contacted me back in 2009, before the stimulus bill came out, right after Obama was elected and took office in January 2009. And people called me up from D.C. and said, something's going on with healthcare because of the meetings we're seeing in the West Wing. Keep your antenna up, because they're going to try something. When they passed the stimulus bill, I had enough experience in Washington where I knew there was something hidden in the stimulus bill that it wasn't really about shovel-ready jobs, because the stimulus bill was found to be a sham when it came to the creation of jobs. And I knew there was something in there associated with a big, big agenda item. And I had been given a heads up that the first push that Obama was going to make was in health care. And to take control, because it's all about control, take control of health care delivery. Because what I was told from folks in Washington, a number of different circles, look, if they can control your health, they can control every aspect of your life and every business's life. And that's why they were going for health care first. So the Congressional Budget Office downloaded the stimulus bill about 1 o'clock in the morning. So I wake up, set the alarm, wake up. My wife thinks, you know, Dave, I'm sure it's not going to, there's something in here. I know it. And it was hundreds of pages long. I think it was around page 300 and something in the stimulus bill, and all of a sudden, there it was. Because back in the 90s, I was brought to Washington, actually by Senator Dole, who said to me, he was the Senate Majority Leader at the time, he goes, you know, Dave, you kind of look at things differently. Reagan loved you. Just look at you and another person. I want you to look at Hillary Care and tell us what's right about and what's wrong about it. So then we found a couple things that were right, Chris, but a lot of things that were wrong. And they used that to help blow apart Hillary Care, which was actually led to my first interaction with the IRS, a nice audit that happened very soon after that. I had a background with healthcare policy and how these guys try to sneak stuff through. And I'm reading through the stimulus bill, and I come to page 300 and something, and there it is. It was like, here I am looking at Hillary Care again. And in particular, there were two parts. You see, in the stimulus bill, and this is something the mainstream media world has never reported on, and God knows, Chris, I have tried. With all my media contacts and my prevention work, I called every major news outlet about this finding. Not one of them did anything on it. They didn't deny it was there. They didn't deny what I was telling them. I did get feedback saying, you know, Dave, we can't go there. Which all kind of goes to the fact that the mainstream media is owned and operated by the same globalist network, which I think is a point of fact. So in the stimulus bill, here's the first thing that came out. I realized, and here it is in black and white writing, there was a rationing board created in the stimulus bill. Not in Obama, not in the health care bill. This is in the stimulus bill. It was called the Federal Coordinating Council for Comparative Effectiveness Research.
Let's say that again.
Yeah. So there was a rationing board created in the stimulus bill called the Federal Coordinating Council for Comparative Effectiveness Research. And I'll get into that in a second, there was an enforcement board created called the Office of the National Coordinator of Health Information Technology. Now, how do I know that first board is a rationing board? Because of the words comparative effectiveness. Comparative effectiveness was developed in the British healthcare model, a model I had studied extensively, and actually a model that was partly implemented in Canada where I did my fellowship. So I had experience. And when I saw comparative effectiveness, I said, bam, there's a rationing board. Because the definition of comparative effectiveness, Chris, is the approval or rejection of a treatment or test based on two things. The cost of the treatment divided by the number of years the patient will benefit. Cost of the treatment divided by the number of years the patient will benefit. It is a rationing formula that was developed in the British healthcare model. It was also implemented in the Canadian healthcare model. And here I was staring at it in the stimulus bill, the first part of Obamacare. How do I know that second board, the National Coordinator's Office for Information Technology, was an enforcement board? Because direct quote from the stimulus bill, the National Coordinator's Office will, quote, guide medical decisions at the time and place of care, end quote. The coordinator's office will be responsible for monitoring treatments to ensure providers, doctors, and hospitals are following government protocols. It went on. Hospitals and providers that are not, quote, meaningful users of the new system will face penalties. And the Secretary of Health and Human Services can impose more stringent measures of meaningful use over time. Now, that had passed in February of 2009, about 3 weeks after Obama took the oath of office twice. I was asked in July of 2009 to come to Washington and to present at a congressional dinner as the keynote speaker to members of the House about what was happening in health care reform. This was scary, Chris. So here I am, supposedly in the bastion of freedom and democracy, in the Capitol building at this big congressional dinner, Republicans in the room, independents in the room, and some Democrats in the room. Pelosi didn't make it because she was all upset that I was there because I was, you know, I'm not a globalist. But there were both parties, mainly Republicans, most independents, and some Democrats in the room. And I put this information up in a PowerPoint in front of them. Now, these are the people that passed the stimulus bill, right? Chris, there are, I would say, there were dozens and dozens and dozens of congressmen in the room. They all had four or five staff members in this big room. So there were a lot of people in the room. When I put this information up in front of them, there were about two people that knew that this stuff was in what they passed. They're all kind of looking around the room going, God, we passed that? We voted on that? That was in there? So when I got to the part where I said, look, I'm really troubled by all of this, but tell me what this means. Hospitals and providers, quote, hospitals and providers that are not meaningful users of the system, the new system, Obamacare, will face penalties. And the Secretary of Health and Human Services can impose more stringent measures of meaningful use over time, end quote. I go, does this mean that coordinating council, that comparative effectiveness council that will create these protocols based on the rationing of care, and then if I don't follow those protocols, I can be fined? Congressman stood up, looked at me, and he goes, Dr. Janda, that's exactly what it means. I go, so what are we talking about here? Let's say when this kicks in, these protocols kick in, and right now they appear to be, they're going to start to be phased in starting in January 2017. Wonder why I'm going to get done in December of 2016, Chris?
All right.
When the protocols start to be implemented, so a patient comes into a room, the doc comes into the room, we have our handheld devices now, electronic medical records. Remember, electronic medical records are not meant for patient benefit. They're meant for control. Okay? So we'll put in a code of the diagnosis. That will go to the insurance company and go to Washington. While we're still in the room, it will come back, the protocol, how we're supposed to treat the patient. According to this congressman, he said, and this is back in 2009, he goes, Dr. Janda, if you don't follow that protocol, even though you think it might be wrong, if you don't follow that protocol, you're in violation of the law. I go, well, what does that mean? Does that mean that I'm gonna get fined for, you know, I'm gonna get paid $20 to see the patient, you're going to find me $100? He goes, no, you're not going to feel that. He goes, it could mean on your first offense you'll be fined $100,000. It's at the discretion of the Health and Human Services Secretary. And basically, Janda, because you've been so outspoken about that, I wouldn't doubt that they'd fine you $100,000 on your first offense. I go, well, what happens if I keep doing this? Because it says in the stimulus bill, they can impose more stringent measures. I mean, what does that mean? They're going to fine me $101,000 the second time I don't follow the protocol, even though I know it's wrong? He goes, no, Dr. Janda, you could well go to jail. Chris, I started laughing. I thought it was a joke. I was the only one in the room laughing. They're all kind of looking at me. You know, Chris, the last question a congressman asked me at that dinner keynote address I gave, congressman stood up. He goes, Dr. Janda, I'm going to be doing some interviews on the networks on Sunday morning. He goes, if somebody asked me, what's one word to describe Obamacare? Because remember, Pelosi and the powers that be were trying to jam the health care bill through before the end of July of 2009. Now, that didn't happen until March 2010 because we caused such a fuss about all this. But the key said, well, what's the one word I should give if somebody asks me what's the best way to describe Obamacare and health care reform as it's currently being rolled out? What's the one word to describe that to the public? And I start thinking, Chris, malignant, cancerous, And then it came to me. My mom was a history teacher. And she taught me about a system where you have authoritarian nationalism that penalizes and punishes anyone and everyone who opposes the state. That's fascism. And I looked at this congressman and I said, if you're asked what the one word is, sir, the answer is fascist. It's interesting.
So, Dave, let me ask you a question, because the timing of all this seems okay. Let's see if I have the dots right. So this is snuck through this stimulus bill. This is just a few weeks post inauguration.
Yeah.
Presumably they didn't cobble this together in a few weeks, but you gave me another clue, which is that you recognize the language because it had been in place in the UK.
Yep.
I consider the UK to be like the ultimate nanny state, millions of cameras everywhere and people very extremely locked down culturally in terms of what they can and can't do. People there aren't even allowed to defend themselves in their own homes from break-in. So there's a very strong, you know, sense that the government needs to be providing for the useless eaters, as you're calling them, but we might say the common person. So it feels to me like that, whatever that agenda is, got picked up and dropped into our shovel-ready so-called stimulus bill. So to me, this sounds like this had been in the works well before Obama, obviously. Is that true, and who's driving this?
The globalists, and in that group I would put folks that we commonly talk about that are members of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the insurance industry, big pharmaceutical companies. I believe this was long in the works, Chris.
Yeah.
And what they needed to do is they needed a puppet that was willing to lie willingly to the public to put this over the top, to implement it. And in fact, one of the criticisms I had when I first started talking about all this is, and this is why I believe they chose Obama, because it made it very easy for them. Because most people, when they're leveled with this charge, shrink and they go away. The criticism that first came to me, by the truckload, was the reason why I was opposed to Obamacare is because I was a racist.
Yeah.
Now, Chris, I'm a surgeon. I have been in clinical practice for 27 years. I was a resident for 5 years before that. I've been involved in surgery and then 4 years in medical school before that. So 36 years of my life, I've been in an operating room. Chris, let me tell you something. When you lay that scalpel on a person's skin, after you get through the first 2 millimeters, here's the revelation to all those people that say that. We're all pink.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never met a surgeon or anyone who has ever set foot in an operating room that is a racist. Because it becomes very apparent after the first 2 seconds you're in an operation, we're all the same. So, when I came out with this criticism and expose of that Obamacare was hitting, it was a ration-based program. That's why I'm so against it. Whether it's insurance company or government bureaucrat doing it, rationing is rationing. It's the most unethical and inhumane means of cutting healthcare costs. And that's what Obamacare is all based on. That's what Hillary Care was based on. And let's not let the Bushes out of this. They didn't propose any meaningful healthcare reform because they were told not to, because their handlers, the globalists in the insurance industry, were telling them, don't do anything. Just shut the hell up and just keep things going. Everything's okay.
Well, let's put this in perspective. I mean, for, you know, people think the military-industrial complex is strong. Of course it is. Of course it is. We spend $1 trillion a year on it. But healthcare is $3.8 trillion. Huh. It's a very, very large number. So obviously there's a lot of power invested in this particular angle. Now, but Dave, a lot of people this year are going to be surprised and shocked at the increases in their healthcare premiums, because of course, as I mentioned in the intro, the group that got left out of needing to control their costs at all were the health insurers. It's shocking to me. If you pull up the top 10 CEO pay for health insurers, you get some shocking numbers. People who think it's in their duty to take home 10, 20, 30, sometimes more than $100 million a year in pay because they're worth it. And that's just the CEO. Let's put the rest of the C-suite in there, the COO, the CFO, and all the other assorted hangers on and other people. I bet I could find a super qualified person to run a healthcare business like that for no more than $1 million. But you know, here we are with people, you know, just the health insurance industry. I was talking with somebody who just came out of talking with a senator, and the senator had described Obamacare as the single largest giveaway to the health insurance industry in its entire existence. And that is saying something.
And that is correct. And the reason that's correct is because as I mentioned, the insurance industry is who was behind writing Obamacare along with the globalist network. You see, all you have to do, Chris, is look at the stock prices of insurance companies. Mm-hmm. Look at the price of the stock price of United Healthcare in February of 2009, when the first part of Obamacare passed, and look at it now, 600-800% increase. No, they've made out like banshees. Look, Chris, look at they have a product that has been mandated by government that people have to buy. Imagine if Chris and Dave got together and we decided we were going to make this really great, we were going to make this kind of cool type of fried donut, right? Something that nutritionally isn't very good, right? But you and I decide we're going to make this, and you know what? We got a couple buddies that are in Congress, and let's get them on board, and let's get them to pass a law that says that everybody has to eat a fried donut every day. And let's also get them on board to say that if people don't eat a fried donut every day, we will have the IRS come down and kick your door in because you didn't buy a donut, a fried donut, every day. And that's exactly what's happened. The insurance industry, this is beyond a giveaway. This is criminal, what has occurred with Obamacare, because what Obamacare is about is insurance companies, as you mentioned, drastically increasing premium charges. I mean, all you have to do is look at these guys and look at Oregon announced just yesterday, their healthcare exchange, just their exchange in Obamacare, they're increasing their pricing 29.6%. Getting for next year. For next year, if you look at the cost of premiums of what's happened since 2009, they've gone through the roof. And in the same time, people are having higher co-pays, higher deductibles, and it's leading to the rationing of care. Chris, it's a beautiful business model if you're a sociopath. And that's what these people are.
So you mentioned, Dave, that you were audited once. How many times have you been audited? Are you being audited personally or as a business? What's going on there?
So right after myself and another guy gave all the information to Dole that ended up taking out HillaryCare, that was in 1994, my wife and I were audited every year from 1995 through 2000 to when Clinton left office. Now, when we were audited, it was very interesting, Chris. The IRS guys were actually very nice to us and apologetic. And every year they call us up, they tell us we're being audited, and they go, "You realize why you're being audited?" I go, "Yes." They go, "We're very sorry." I go, "I understand. Just, you know, be fair and be honest, and let's move on." And they never found a thing, okay? Now let me tell you about the last time we were audited. Drastically different. In June, remember now, I spoke in 2009 in Congress. I've been all over the media. I have this radio show that started in October of 2010, Operation Freedom. Out there pounding about the hazards of Obamacare and many other items and going after the globalists on many different fronts. I have a YouTube out there. Somebody taped me doing one of my presentations, and they cut it down into 6 minutes, and it's on YouTube. And it's supposedly, I'm told, it's the highest rated and viewed YouTube clip on a public policy issue, that being Obamacare, over 2.9 million hits. That has driven, as I'm told internally within the Obama administration, has driven them insane. Because here I am, it was from 2010, I'm laying it all on the line, and everything I said has actually turned out to be correct. So, June of 2013, I get a notice in the mail. You're being audited. I anticipated this was going to happen because I went through that with the Clintons, and I was kind of surprised it hadn't happened before. And the audit notice says you're being audited for the years 2010, 2011, and 2012. Okay. So, we pay the IRS, my wife and I, a lot of money every year. We have no offshore investments, Chris. We have nothing funny. We pay for our kids' education, which is very expensive. We take, you know, basic vacations. We don't do a lot of business expenses or anything like that. We donate a lot of money to charity. So my accountant says, oh, I'm surprised you guys are getting audited like this. I go, I'm not. I go, when you go into the room with the auditors from the IRS, ask them one question. Ask them why we're being audited. He goes, Dave, they're not going to. What do you think they're going to say? I go, I think they're going to tell you because it's me in my mouth and telling the truth. He goes, Dave, they're not going to say that. They're already getting some heat about looking at Tea Party organizations and stuff. I go, look what they're asking for. The years 2010, 2011, 2012. I go, you go ask him the question. So he meets with the IRS auditors. He calls me. He goes, so Dave, I want you to sit down. I go, why? He goes, I'm going to tell you something here that happened. I go, what happened? He goes, I walked in the room and I did what you told me to do. I knew that they weren't going to come up with anything. I said, you know, the Janus are wondering why they're being audited because they already pay you a lot of money and they don't have any weird investments or any offshore investments. Why are they being audited? He goes, Dave, The auditor looked at me and said, direct quote, Dave, it starts with his radio show, end quote.
Hmm.
And I go, yeah. That audit, Chris, lasted from June of 2013 to March of 2014, 9 months. Let me give you an example of what they did. Chris, I lecture around the country. I lecture other places around the world, too. And when I lecture around the country on Obamacare, I refuse payment. I refuse to get paid. I'm doing it for my patriotic duty, fine. But when I go to these places and I spend my own money to fly there, spend my own money to stay at a hotel, spend my own money on food and not get reimbursed, to me that's a legitimate business expense. Our accountants felt the same way. So as the IRS guys are going through this, they go, well, you know, Janda speaks all over the country on this healthcare policy stuff. He goes, yeah. Well, he didn't report any income from that. Well, that's because he refuses to get paid. Well, we've never heard of that. He goes, well, now you have. Well, why would he refuse to get paid? Because he believes it's his patriotic duty to inform people of what's really going on that the mainstream media refuses to talk about. Oh. Well, we want documentation from these organizations that he lectured to around the country for the past 2010, 2011, 2012 that he didn't get paid. Okay. So I save emails of people thanking me. So we redacted people's names. We redacted their email addresses. But we left in there the fact that in these notes that were sent to me, we really appreciate you doing this, and the fact that you didn't accept any, you know, speaking fee, you know, I'm not Hillary Clinton, right? You didn't accept any speaking fee. We really appreciate that. We turned that over to the IRS. And they came back and they go, well, we want further proof that he spoke at all these events. All right, what kind of proof do you want? Well, we want programs from the events, from all these places he spoke around the country those 3 years. So I saved programs. So we gave him the programs. And they go, okay, well, you have that. All right, well, just because his name's on the program, we want documentation that he actually spoke at these events. I go, you know, we said, he already got the letter saying that he didn't accept the speaking fee. Well, we want further corroboration. Okay, so more emails, redacted names, redacted addresses. Here you go. So then they got that, and here's what they said next, Chris. Okay, well, you have everything now, so we'll approve these deductions, but we need one more piece of information. What's that? We want the names of every person that was in all these audiences the last 3 years because we want to make sure there weren't any federal officials in the crowd, because if there were, that means he would be lobbying federal officials, and you can't claim that as a deduction. Okay? Now, that's when our accountants told them to go stuff it. But this is how crazy it got, Chris. And it became very obvious as the audit went along that the way the audit would end, could end quickly, is if I stopped doing my radio show. Well, Chris, that show is still going today.
Well, Dave, that's just a... you know what you're making me think is that maybe House of Cards ought to be nominated for the best reality show of the past few years, because you're describing the Underwoods, whether it was under prior administrations. And again, equal opportunity basher in this case. This is happening, but there's a system here that is hell-bent on just using and leveraging power. This is what I think people are beginning to wake up to. Yep. I'm increasingly encouraged by that. I'm discouraged by the degree to which still things like common sense and science, do not yet have a full seat at the table. But in your mind here, as we come to the close of this, how do we begin to fix this? We'll call it a healthcare system. I'm calling it a sick care system. But how do we really begin to fix this system in this country? I mean, is this tackle a seven-headed hydra, or is there a way that individuals can begin to work at their level? Which way, how do we do this? From your perspective.
Here is my approach to how this comes to an end. The people in Washington, I believe 99% of them, are owned and operated by a criminal international banking syndicate, of which the insurance industry is part of, as is Big Pharma. These people in Washington, whether they're Republican or Democrat, it doesn't matter. They are deathly afraid of two things. One, not having enough money to run for re-election. It's money that's very plentifully given to them by the criminal syndicate. Now, they try to shake down us useless eaters because, let's face it, the less money all of us useless eaters have, the harder it is for us to rebel against the syndicate, right? So it's kind of like they want to, get the stuff. They want to pick our pockets as much as they can, whether it's taxes or whether it's donations to them, because they want us poor. Because if we're poor, then we're an easier target. So number one, don't donate to those guys, any of them. But here's what they're afraid of. They're afraid, because they'll always have enough money given to them by the globalists. The second thing they're afraid of, and this is with me having experienced since 1988 to the present, the second thing they're afraid of is a populace that realizes and is awakened and knows what's going on and realizes that they're on the wrong side of it. Because they know no matter how the machines are rigged, if they are in such disfavor, no matter how badly those machines are rigged in their favor, it doesn't matter. Because when the public gets wise, they vote with their feet, and they vote to get them out of office. And that's what they're deathly afraid of. And all you have to do to think about that is Eric Cantor with the Republican Party. Right? You can't tell me those machines weren't rigged in his favor, yet he lost. And he lost because it was such an overwhelmingly get the bum out that's why he lost. And you see, that's what they're all afraid of. They are petrified of that. There's only so many times, there's only so many votes the globalists can throw their way. So the first thing that everybody in our country needs to do is you go to every elected official and say, number one, you need to immediately vote to repeal this law immediately. And if you don't, I will talk to every family member. I will talk to every neighbor. We will mobilize and force against you and make sure you don't even make it through the primary election. And in fact, we will even push for you to be recalled. Let me tell you something. Many people think that they don't have any power. That's what the media that's owned by the globalist syndicate, that's what the politicians, that's what the globalists want everybody to think, that they don't have power. We have power in numbers, and we have to use those numbers to get these scum out of there. And anyone who ever voted for Obamacare, anyone who continues to push Obamacare or any aspect of it needs to go. And let me give you a good example. There was something that passed recently called the Doc Fix, which is supposedly going to help docs so that their payments are protected when it comes to Medicare. BS. It's called MACRA. And what MACRA is the extension arm of Obamacare. We just got the rules the other day, the printed rules of this MACRA that both Republicans and Democrats voted for and approved and voted into being implemented. Chris, last Thursday they came to our office, and my office manager comes to me and she goes, "Dave, Dave, here you go again, proven right again." She goes, "We just got this book based on this MACRA legislation that was based on Obamacare. It's 962 pages of the regulations we have to implement in order to take care of patients."
962 pages.
That came on Thursday. On Friday came a 500-page manual of how to interpret the 962 pages. And Chris, what it focused about was the use of electronic medical records. Remember we talked about in the stimulus bill, the National Coordinator's Office of Information Technology, a direct extension of that, and it talked about protocols. Remember, the Comparative Effectiveness Council, the same part of Obamacare is talking about that was in the stimulus bill. Now, Chris, the only way this ends is for people, this is not a spectator sport. They can't sit on the bench any longer. They have to be mobilized, and they have to confront. I'm not saying you beat up. I'm not saying violence here. I'm saying verbally confront every person in Congress and tell them it's immediately repealed or you're done. You're gone. You're repealed. You're voted out in the primary. And, Chris, when that starts to happen, this thing goes away. It implodes. Because it's imploding on itself. But the problem is what the powers that be are going to push here, and this is what the insurance companies have decided, and this is what it's – they knew this was not going to work. But they're going to get a huge amount of money out of it, and the next thing they're going to push for, Chris, is a single-payer system. So as Obamacare falls, they're going to push for a single-payer system, and the insurance companies like UnitedHealthcare and the Blue Cross Blue Shield Group and Humana have already divided up the country about how they're going to administer a single-payer plan. And we have to make sure that because this thing is been rigged to implode, we have to make sure that what's not put in its place is a single payer system, but free market reforms that utilize health savings accounts, that utilize prevention and wellness initiatives, that utilize selling insurance across straight state lines. Oh my gosh, can you imagine insurance companies, rather than colluding, actually have to compete?
That would be very good for me because there's a insurance just 10 miles from me up in Vermont that I would love to get. Can't get it here. It's legislatively been forbidden that they operate here. So I totally get that. And Dave, we are unfortunately out of time. I hope we can do this again because there's so many areas we didn't even cover yet. And I understand completely why it is that you're retiring this year. And what I'm looking forward to, though, is if I could say it this way, that you'll have more time to take your talent, your efforts, and put them where they are really, really needed. I'm sure you're a fantastic orthopedic surgeon, but I think your talents are needed to help get us more generally and broadly out of this mess that we're in. So people can find you at www.davejanda.com. That's with a J, janda.com. And your Operation Freedom can also be found there at davejanda.com/Operation Freedom with a hyphen between Operation and Freedom. Does that about cover it for you?
That covers it, Chris. I want to thank you for all your efforts over the years. As I said at the beginning, I've been a big fan of you and your efforts. I really think that we have the power, and we truly are awakening the public. And as the public awakens, I think the globalists go down for the count.
Well, that's from your lips to God's ears. And, of course, I'm a huge fan of the fact that we do have the power. And that's an important message because so much money and marketing has been spent to convince us that we do not have the power, but we do have the power. Very encouraging. So Dave, again, thank you so much for your time and for the work that you're doing in the world.
And I thank you, Chris, for all that you're doing as well. And thank you for giving me the opportunity.